Shalom, welcome to Ask JTF. This is Chaim Ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to elevating the souls of Simcha Chasdai, Pesach Ben Dov, Meir Ben Yecheskel, and Yosef Ben Meir. Before we get to our many questions from our great JTFers, I of course want to speak about the two big subjects this week, the death of Ariel Sharon and the Bridgegate scandal of Chris Christie. First, the death of Ariel Sharon, Yimach Shmo V'Zichro Shem Reshaim Yirkav. May his name and memory be obliterated, may the name of the wicked rot. Sharon did do some good things for Israel when he was younger, but he did them only because it served his personal interest. When it was in his personal interest to do some good things, whether as a general or in other positions that he held, he did do good things when it was something that served him personally. But the minute that he felt it was in his personal interest to betray the Jewish people, he repeatedly betrayed the Jewish people, and in the most destructive way possible. So Ariel Sharon was always a true traitor in every sense of the word. Ariel Sharon, as we mentioned in our Hebrew and English videos that we released this week, did terrible things to the Jewish people that to this day endanger Israel's very existence. Number one, he was the defense minister who supervised the expulsion of 3,000 Jews from Yamit in the Sinai and the ultimate retreat from all of Sinai. Sinai was two-thirds of the state of Israel. Two-thirds of the state of Israel was the Sinai. The Sinai is a vast peninsula. And so when Israel surrendered the entire Sinai to Muslim Nazi Egypt, that insane surrender meant that Israel shrunk to only one-third of her original size. Israel was only one-third as big as her original size after the surrender of the Sinai by Menachem Begin and the Likud and Ariel Sharon. A complete act of insanity. Sharon is the one who supervised the strategy of how to get the 3,000 Jews out of Yamit, how to expel them, and how to do the destructive policies that led to the retreat from Sinai. That was one example that we gave in our Hebrew and English videos of the terrible consequences of Sharon's perfidy. A second thing which he did was the Lebanon War, the first Lebanon War. He got Israel involved in a war in Lebanon in which over 1,000 Jewish soldiers were murdered in vain. Why? Because Sharon ordered them not to kill so-called Arab Nazi civilians. Arab Nazi civilians were firing at the soldiers and murdering them left and right all over the place. Hundreds of Jewish soldiers were murdered by so-called civilians or people posing as civilians. And the soldiers were not allowed to defend themselves. In other words, the lives of Arab Muslim Nazis in Lebanon were more important than the lives of Jewish soldiers. This was a horrific crime. Over 1,000 Jewish soldiers were murdered in that war. Israel accomplished absolutely nothing in that war. All of Israel's objectives in that war, out of all of Israel's objectives, none of them were accomplished. The war was a disaster, a terrible blow for Israel. And a lot of the war weariness that you see in Israel today, a lot of the unwillingness to fight and to do what Israel was famous for doing in the past, a lot of that destructive, corrosive thinking came as a result of that first Lebanon war, which Sharon got Israel into. And the third example that we cited in our videos, in our Hebrew and English videos that you saw on the forum, involves, of course, the criminal expulsion of over 10,000 Jews from Gush Katif and northern Samaria. 26 flourishing, beautiful Jewish communities were just destroyed, completely destroyed, and handed over to the Arab Muslim Nazi enemy. The entire Gaza district was handed over to the Arab Muslim Nazi enemy, and now all of southern Israel is shelled on a regular basis. Thousands of missiles have been fired into southern Israel, and the people of southern Israel live in a state of terror because of this insanity. And Sharon wanted to continue that. If, God forbid, he had lived, if he hadn't had this stroke that Hashem gave him in order to save the Jewish people, that Hashem in his mercy gave him, Hashem in his mercy gave him this stroke to because Hashem had mercy, God had mercy on the Jewish people. If not for that, he was already going to go ahead with what he did in Gaza. He was going to do that in Judea and Samaria and in East Jerusalem. He was going to surrender all of the land that Israel needs to survive and to defend herself. And so instead of just firing on Ashdod or firing on certain communities in southern Israel that ring around the Gaza district, you would have seen, you would see Muslim terrorists several miles away from the Israeli airport. Do you know what that would mean? Every terrorist would have the ability to fire on and destroy planes taking off, regular commercial planes, passenger planes taking off from the Israeli airport. All of Israel would be paralyzed. Israel would be only 6 to 9 miles wide. Every Jew in Israel would be within the range of artillery fire if Israel went back to those pre-1967 suicide borders that Barack Hussein Obama demands that Israel go back to, and that Ariel Sharon was willing to retreat to. That was his next step. And unfortunately, he was the type of strong dictator who could carry out such a horrible plan in conjunction with the self-hating, anti-Semitic Israeli news media and the robots and puppets in the Israeli army and the Israeli Supreme Court, the left-wing Israeli Supreme Court. He could have carried out a plan like that. It could have happened. God forbid, but it could have happened. But God mercifully took him from us, gave him a stroke, kept him in limbo and punished him for 8 years. And that's nothing compared to what's coming now. Because this monster is responsible for the destruction of Jewish communities, for the surrender of Jewish land, for the murder of many Jewish soldiers and many Jewish civilians. In the Dolphinarium was a nightclub that Israeli kids used to go to, and it was bombed by the PLO Fatah terrorists. And 25 or 30 kids were murdered. I don't remember the exact number, but it was 25 or 30 kids were just blown up and murdered. And Sharon said at the time, we're not going to retaliate because self-restraint is strength. The real strength is when you show self-restraint when you're being bombed and blown up and attacked by your enemies. You don't even respond. You let them just blow you up and attack you. That's what he said. Ipuk ze koach in Hebrew. Ipuk means means restraint. Restraint is strength. That's strength. That's when you're dealing with Arab Muslim Nazi mass murderers, restraint is strength. He was corrupt and evil to the core. He stole millions of dollars from the Israeli public. And that's why he was blackmailed by the Israeli prosecutor's office and the leftists controlled the Israeli prosecutor's office and the Israeli Supreme Court, and they blackmailed him. And they said, look, we're going to indict you and prosecute you if you don't throw the Jews out of Gush Katif. And if he had survived, God forbid, they would have blackmailed him again, and he would have continued this plan of dismantling and destroying and handing over huge chunks of the land of Israel to Israel's enemies and endangering Israel's survival. Baruch Hashem, thank God that he's gone. And may it only happen to all the self-hating Jewish anti-Semites and Jewish traitors. Amen, ken yehi ratzon. And by the way, the most interesting part of all of this is, you saw the videos on our forum, you saw the Hebrew and English videos that we did on this subject. We are literally the only people who dared to say what we said. No one else has said what we have said. No one. Literally, no one. We are the only ones who said what we said about Sharon. In other words, JTF and our movement in Israel, Hayamin Hamiti, are the only voices of truth. When important events happen, there are many times when we're the only voices of truth. Sometimes when events happen, there are other voices of truth as well. But in this case, we were the only ones. The only voice of truth. I challenge you to find anyone else who told the truth about Sharon, who really told the truth about Sharon. Isn't it important that there be one voice, at least, of truth, of uncompromising truth? Don't you think God wants the Jewish people to hear the truth from someone, from someplace? If we weren't around, there'd be no voices of truth. There'd be not one person. No one would be standing up and telling the truth. No one would be telling the truth. When I say not one person, I mean publicly. Or in a way that, you know, the public can see. That would be a terrible situation. So I think we can be proud that at least one organization has the guts to tell the truth. The second story this week, of course, was Chris Christie and Bridgegate. And we're going to be releasing a video, by the way, in the next day or two. A video that Shlomo has already prepared. And Shlomo, you know, does the best videos. He does the gold standard for videos. The most professional, the most exciting videos come from Shlomo. We've done an English language video on Chris Christie's Bridgegate scandal. And Chris Christie is still one of the front-running candidates for the 2016 Republican presidential nomination, believe it or not. I hope the scandal continues. If the scandal continues, it's possible it could do him in if other things come out and if it continues. But it's also very possible, if any of you saw the reaction of Republican leaders and Republican establishment people rallying around Chris Christie today, you would know that it's still very possible that the Republicans are crazy enough to nominate this guy for president. It still could possibly happen. He could still win the nomination after all this. It's still possible. I hope it won't happen, God forbid, and we're going to do everything we can to prevent it, but it's very possible. Can you imagine what the Democrats and Hillary Clinton will do to him in the November election if he is the Republican candidate? This is a guy who, together with his aides, held up traffic for 4 hours, 4 days in a row, punishing school kids on the first day of school, preventing ambulances from reaching hospitals, and there was a woman in her 90s who had a heart attack and they couldn't reach the hospital, and just terrible tragedies, and police and ambulances and other emergency vehicles couldn't get through because they deliberately clogged up the George Washington Bridge and deliberately clogged up the roads by closing down lanes to punish the mayor of Fort Lee because he didn't want to endorse Chris Christie for re-election. I mean, it doesn't get worse than this. This is the most horrific type of scandal. And this is a scandal that voters can understand and relate to. Because everybody hates being stuck in traffic. Everybody hates a situation like that. And if you know that a politician made you sit in traffic 4 hours, made you 2 or 3 hours late for work, if you know that something like that happened, or if you read that this is what a politician did to the people in his state, did to his own constituents, just for personal, political, petty vengeance against some other politician. If you know that, you're never going to want to support somebody like that. So this is this type of scandal that people can relate to. And Republicans, the same Republicans who gave us the loser John McCain, who gave us the loser Mitt Romney, these same Republicans, same establishment types, like Karl Rove and the Fox News type of people, these same Republican National Committee and the Chamber of Commerce, the Wall Street Republicans, they think Chris Christie would be fine as a candidate. Let me tell you something. I personally, as a matter of conscience, cannot and will not support him under any circumstances if he wins the nomination. Him I cannot support. Yes, we supported John McCain against Barack Hussein Obama. We were against McCain when he was running for the nomination. We tried to stop him. You remember, we supported Mike Huckabee and we did videos against McCain and did everything we could to try to stop McCain. But unfortunately, the Republican establishment and the media convinced stupid Republican primary and caucus voters to pick McCain as the Republican candidate for president. And let me make something clear. The way the nomination process works in both parties, the people, the voters, do not have to listen to the party leaders or the party bosses or the media. If most of the people who vote in the primaries and caucuses vote for a particular candidate, even if the establishment's against that candidate, if that candidate gets a majority of the votes or gets the most votes in the primaries and caucuses, he is the nominee. Because the delegates to the convention that nominate the candidate, those delegates are selected by the voters. So if the voters, let's say, choose someone like Ronald Reagan, even though the Republican establishment was against Ronald Reagan, Ronald Reagan gets the nomination, and that's what happened in 1980. The establishment supported George H.W. Bush, George Bush Sr., but Ronald Reagan ran against him, and Ronald Reagan beat him in the primaries and caucuses and got the nomination, even though the Republican establishment hated Ronald Reagan. The same thing happened with Barry Goldwater in 1964. And the same thing can happen with Ted Cruz in 2016 if Republican voters would just wake up and be independent-minded. So we're going to support Ted Cruz and we're going to try to get him the nomination. But, Chris Christie, believe it or not, is still in the running, is still a serious contender. And there are other disastrous candidates that they want to put forward as well. We supported, let me remind you again, we supported McCain after he got the nomination already, when it was hopeless and he couldn't be stopped and he got the nomination, he had a majority of the delegates, he got the nomination. It was a difficult decision to make, but we decided to support him because we wanted to stop Barack Hussein Obama from getting elected to the presidency. So we supported McCain as a lesser of the evils, even though we hated him. And we still hate him. And we never forgot what our great leader, Rabbi Meir Kahana Zatzal, always taught us. The lesser of the evils is still evil. But still, for the good of America and Israel and the Western world and the danger that Obama posed, we still supported McCain, if you recall. It didn't make any difference. McCain lost anyway, which is what we expected. We warned when McCain was running for the nomination that he would be a loser, and of course he was. We were right. And in 2012, we opposed Mitt Romney for the nomination, if you recall. But he still won the nomination, unfortunately. The Republican establishment pushed him and he won. Regrettably, Mike Huckabee didn't run in 2012. He should have. And Mitt Romney got the nomination. And again, we supported Mitt Romney, even though we never liked Mitt Romney. But we warned, if you remember, when he was running for the nomination, we warned that he would lose. We warned he would not be a winning candidate. We were right about that again. Anyway, here we are again, warning once again that the Republican establishment candidates like Chris Christie will be a disaster. Is anybody listening? I don't know. We're not going to support, but what we did with McCain and Romney is not going to happen in 2016. We will not support Chris Christie. I will not support. Let me put it to you this way. Of course, my fellow JTFers, you're all free to do what you wish. Everybody is free to do what they want. But I personally, as a matter of conscience, I will not support Chris Christie. This is someone who is so pro-Muslim that I don't see any advantage of having him in the White House over a left-wing Democrat. I don't think if it's him versus Hillary Clinton, I think the two of them are the same. I think it's twiddly-dee and twiddly-dumb. I don't see any difference. Chris Christie appointed a Muslim terrorist attorney to the New Jersey Superior Court. And when New Jersey state senators, including Republican state senators, wanted to investigate this Muslim terrorist attorney's past of representing Muslim terrorists, Chris Christie said, anyone who raises any questions about him is an Islamophobe. And Chris Christie supported the Victory Mosque at 9/11, at the site of 9/11, at the site of the Twin Towers. The Muslims built a Victory Mosque in the area which was destroyed on 9/11, which is something Muslims always do when they carry out their acts of mass murder. A Victory Mosque was built by Muslim terrorist organizations, money from Hamas and the Saudis and other Muslim terrorists to build this mosque. And even left-wing voters in New York City, according to the polls, were overwhelmingly against building this mosque and felt that it shouldn't be built. But Chris Christie and Mike Bloomberg and other traitor politicians all said, no, you have to allow it to be built. But Chris Christie was especially evil on this issue. He again said, it's Islamophobia. You're not allowed to be against it. You're a bigot. You're a bigot if you don't allow the Muslim Nazis to build a victory mosque on the site where they murdered over 3,000 Americans. And this very week, the day before Bridgegate came out, Chris Christie signed the so-called Dream Act in New Jersey to give special taxpayer-funded benefits and subsidies to illegal aliens in the education system in New Jersey. That, of course, means that New Jersey, like other states that have done this, will be a magnet to attract more and more illegal aliens from the third world. And don't believe for a minute that, they want to encourage brainy people to come to America. Oh, baloney. The people they're encouraging to come here are the most ignorant, stupid, cruel, evil, anti-American, third world garbage. That's who's coming into this country. Jealous, hateful, criminal, third world, primitive garbage that will destroy America. And that is, they're already destroying America. And that's who's those are the people he's attracting to New Jersey. And with affirmative action that he has pushed in that state, those are the people he pushes through the college and university system. He enables these illegal aliens with affirmative action to get special benefits that American citizens don't even get. There is no advantage to having him in the White House over the Democrats. As bad as the Democrats are, as bad as Hillary Sodom Clinton, it would be a nightmare as president. But Chris Christie wouldn't be any better. So we're going to do everything we can to support Ted Cruz. And you're going to be seeing a video coming out about Chris Christie. Once again, here we are telling the truth. And I know there are some who say, well, look at how the media made such a big deal over Chris Christie and Bridgegate, but they didn't do the same thing about Barack Hussein Obama and the IRS scandal. And first of all, even if that's true, that excuses what Chris Christie did. That means it's okay to nominate a left-wing rhino who will sell out and betray us on every single issue? I mean, how absurd. And this is nothing. I think the media will let this go. We'll let this issue slide eventually. At least that may happen. Unless there are new things that come up. If new things come up, then the media can't let it slide. But the media would be willing to give him a pass because the media wants him to get the nomination. They want Chris Christie to be the nominee, just like they wanted McCain and they wanted Romney. If not Chris Christie, they'd love to see that other traitor, Rand Paul, get the nomination. Rand Paul, who plagiarizes all of his speeches from Wikipedia. He goes to Wikipedia to these silly, crazy, weird movies that he watches from 20 years ago, these crazy, weird movies that no one ever saw 20 years ago, and he quotes from the plot lines of these weird movies and takes whole paragraphs from Wikipedia and puts them into his speeches and puts them into his book and puts them into his columns, and the Washington Times fired Rand Paul from writing a column because of his plagiarism. Can you imagine what the Democrats and Hillary Clinton and the Clinton machine are going to do if Rand Paul is the nominee? And we will not support Rand Paul either, by the way, if he gets the nomination. Those are two that we will not support, Rand Paul and Chris Christie. So let's hope, God willing, we can stop them from getting the nomination. We're going to support Ted Cruz. The good news here is that Ted Cruz is a very good speaker and a very good debater. He has that Reagan-esque quality. That may give us a shot, even though the establishment, the media, everybody's against him. He may have a shot. He may have a chance because he's such a good speaker. Let's hope so. I'm not denying that it's going to be difficult. I'm not denying that it's difficult to defeat the establishment and the money people and the Wall Street people and the powerful people. It's not easy to do that. But Ronald Reagan did it. Let's hope. God willing, let's hope Ted Cruz can do it, and that's who we're going to support. And that's JTF's reaction to those two big stories this week. Aren't you glad? Aren't you proud to be part of a movement that tells the truth? Aren't you proud to be part of a movement that you know will do everything in its power. We may not succeed all the time because we don't have a big budget. But at least you know we're going to fight as hard as we can and try as hard as we can to do the right thing. Fight for justice and truth and righteousness. At least you know that JTF is going to do that. At least you know that there's a voice of truth. And you know how important that is. And so, we urge you to help us. When we put the Hebrew and English videos up there, promote those videos. Go click on the thread that we put up in the sticky. We usually put up a sticky thread in the general discussion section. Click on that thread. Go to the video. Follow the instructions. And it'll only take you a few minutes to help promote the video, to like and comment and do all the other things that you that you can do. Share and link and do all the other things that you can do to promote the video on Facebook and on YouTube. Secondly, help us on our forums and help us on our Facebook pages. When you post good threads or good posts, that makes our forum and that makes our forums and that makes our Facebook pages more attractive. More people will want to become involved with us. Very important. Help us with that. And third, last but not least, help us financially. Every check, money order, and cash donation makes a big difference. God bless the great JTFers who've been helping us. It makes a big difference what you've been doing, a really big difference. We are helping people in Israel, people in Judea and Samaria. I can't even tell you everything that we're doing because I don't want our enemies I just don't want our enemies to know about everything that we do. There are reasons. Israel is not a democratic state, and there are reasons why I don't want our enemies to know everything that we do. But I can assure you we're helping very good people in Judea and Samaria who rely on us. And we're doing, and of course we're spreading the truth. We're spreading the truth that no one else will tell. So, God bless the great JTFers who are helping us. Please help us. The more the better. We need your help. Every check, every money order, every cash donation makes a big difference. That's sent to our post office box through the regular mail. Or, if you want just as good, there's no difference whatsoever for us. It makes no difference. If it's more convenient for you to do it with your credit card online, you can go to our donate button on our English main page. On the top of our English main page is a donate button, or on the top of our Hebrew main page is a donate button, and you can do it that way. It helps us. It's the same thing whether you do it by credit card online for convenience purposes, or whether you, if you want to send a check or a money order or cash donation in an envelope to our post office box, it's the same thing for us. It makes a big difference. God bless our great JTFers in this world and the next. God bless the wonderful, generous people who are helping us. And may God bless the heroic Jews in Judea and Samaria, and the heroic Jews in the hilltop communities, and the heroic Jews that are fighting to save Israel. God bless those who tell the truth and fight for the truth. Okay. Let's get to, I know I took up a lot of time, but there were two really big subjects this week. You know, the death of Ariel Sharon and Chris Christie were two very big events. Let's get now to our questions from our great JTFers. And we start off with the great Wandering Samurai 81, who writes, and I quote, "Dear Chaim, what is your opinion on the rock band Aerosmith?" Unquote. Well, unfortunately, I think it's still part of the pattern of the entertainment industry in general being decadent and creating things that bring society down. You know, even people who are talented and who have good music, some of the music may be good sometimes, but the general atmosphere that is created by these groups is an atmosphere that is decadent and that's bad for society. Look, for instance, at Steven Tyler. I mean, this is a guy who's now in his mid-60s, but he's a longtime drug addict, Steven Tyler from Aerosmith. He was a drug addict for many years. He was a heroin, not a heroin addict, but a cocaine addict. I mean, there's just an atmosphere of decadence, of destructive behavior that's encouraged by these groups, and that's a problem. Wandering Samurai now writes, and I quote, P.S. Is Nickelodeon an evil company? I understand most of its audience is children, just like Disney and Cartoon Network are, unquote. Yeah, but it is an evil company. It's owned by Viacom, which is the owner of MTV. I mean, you can't get more evil than MTV. They've been encouraging evil behavior for decades. I mean, first they started with the rock groups that encourage drug use and promiscuous sex and every evil under the sun. And then they went to rap and all these other horrible manifestations of black inner city culture that they promote. Those are the owners of Nickelodeon. I don't know how they're brainwashing our children, but I know that that's what they do. They introduce, sometimes subtly, sometimes directly, propaganda to brainwash our children and a culture that is degenerate. That's what MTV did. That's what MTV and Viacom own Nickelodeon. And Disney does the same thing. Thank you, Wandering Samurai. And now we go to our friend Joe Gutfeld, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, can you put the strongest curse on a neighbor who is crazy and threatens me on a daily basis? Her name is Sonia, thanks, unquote. Joe, I can't curse somebody that I don't know. I don't personally know anything about this case unless I had absolute evidence that this person deserves to be cursed. I can't curse somebody blindly like this. You may be right. This is a person who may be deserving of a curse. This may be an evil person who's deserving of a curse, who is doing terrible injustice to you. That's possible. You may be right. But I can't do it unless I personally see irrefutable evidence that this person is worthy of a curse. I can't do something like that blindly. I don't want to do something that's unjust and wrong. People could ask me to put a curse on somebody, even if they're sincere. They could be wrong about what they're requesting. So I can't do it if I don't know anything about this person. I can't just do it based upon the fact that you're saying that she's crazy and she threatens you and so on and so forth. I've got to have I would have to have irrefutable evidence that this person is worthy of being cursed. Thank you, Joe. And now we go to the great Lewinsky Stinks, Dr. Brennan Rocks, who writes, and I quote, people used to criticize Chaim Fan for equating evil, slutty celebrities with Nazi anti-Semites, but who's criticizing now, unquote. You are 100% correct. Absolutely. You have every right to say that, and you're 100% correct. Absolutely. I agree with you completely. They are associated with Nazi anti-Semites. They are Jew haters. There's no question about that. And you know something, the Jews in Hollywood that work with them and the Jewish agents and the others are also anti-Semites. I mean, they're people who hate their own people, who hate the Jewish people and who promote them. Even after everything some of these Jew haters in Hollywood do, when somebody does come out and it's clear that they're a Jew hater in Hollywood, they're Jewish agents, the other Jews in Hollywood, you think that they disassociate from them? Not at all. Sometimes the opposite. Sometimes they bend over backwards to show, oh no, this doesn't bother us. We don't care that you're an anti-Semite. We couldn't care less. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. Thank you very much. Very good point. And now we go to the great Chicago Jew who writes, and I quote, who owns the Jerusalem Post, unquote. That's a good question, Chicago Jew. It's owned by a leftist Israeli media company. I don't remember right now what the name of that company is. But I do know that it's owned by a left-wing Israeli media company. And so it's a left-wing newspaper. And it's a newspaper that that spreads lies about the Jewish people and about Israel. It's part of the self-hating media in Israel. It's self-hating media in the English language. Thank you, Chicago Jew. And now we go to our friend Smash Islam, who writes, and I quote, "In Judaism, why do women, A, get harsher punishment for adultery than men? Correct me if I'm wrong." Okay, unquote. Let's start with that. You are wrong. The maximum penalty for adultery in the Torah is death. And that's the man and the woman both face the same penalty. They both face the death penalty. That's the maximum penalty for adultery. Of course, in most cases, the maximum penalty isn't given out, but is not imposed. But technically, the maximum possible penalty is death for both men and for women for adultery. And now Smash Islam writes, B, not inherit from their fathers. What can rabbis do to make inheritance laws more justifiable to women, unquote? Well, first of all, women can and do inherit. Okay, women are part of inheritance. I'm talking about in religious Judaism, in Orthodox Judaism. Of course women inherit. I mean, it's not true that women don't inherit. They do. Now, there was a preference for sons over daughters, reflecting the times that existed, because for thousands of years, you have to remember, the Torah was given to the Jewish people thousands of years ago. For thousands of years, that was the tradition of the nations of the world. Sons were preferred over daughters for purposes of inheritance. And so the Torah, reflecting those times and reflecting that reality. Let me explain something. The Torah does not want to impose on the Jewish people things that go against the traditional culture, unless it's absolutely necessary, unless it's something like idolatry or something like people murdering their children, throwing their children in the fire, which was something that in the Middle East that a lot of these other religions were doing. Unless it's something like that, Judaism, generally speaking, does not want to go against the traditional culture. And Judaism does attempt to make its laws compatible with culture and acceptable to the public as much as possible, when possible, unless it's a major ideological principle here. So for thousands of years, you've got to remember, for thousands of years, sons were preferred over daughters in inheritance laws and in inheritance, not only in the Middle East, but throughout the world. And so Judaism was reflecting the fact that for the vast majority of history, that's the way things were. But fathers are not forbidden in the Jewish faith from leaving in their will, from leaving their fortune and their will to their daughters. They're not at all forbidden from that. And daughters and women do inherit in the Jewish faith. Again, there was a preference for sons over daughters in the times of the Torah and the generation of the Torah, because that's the way things were done in those days. And that's the way things were done in all cultures in those days. But the fact is, the Torah actually is very favorable toward women, especially for the times that it was written in. Very favorable toward women. And now Smash Islam writes, and I quote, P.S. Is listening to Lady Gaga Yamach Shma worse than waterboarding, unquote? Absolutely. Absolutely. For me it is. I absolutely can't stand that nasty beast. For me it is worse than waterboarding. By the way, just going back for a second to the issue of the Torah and the laws that were made in the Torah. We can influence the laws that are in the Torah, as long as they don't go against God's principles. God allows us to influence the laws. For instance, the rabbis in the land of Israel, in the Beit Din, in the rabbinic court in Israel, determine the times when holidays fall during the year. A lot of things the Jews are allowed to influence, and because we are partners with God and creating Torah Judaism. God gave the Torah to the Jewish people, but he also gave Jews the right to influence aspects of the laws and the way they're put into effect. And so just as thousands of years ago, sons generally were preferred over daughters in inheritance. That was something that there was a preference there. But there is nothing there that a father is not forbidden from including his daughter in the inheritance in his will. And if you look at wills today that are created by Jewish fathers and by Jewish parents, they don't leave their daughters out of the will, not at all. Not at all. So we are permitted to put our cultural influences into the laws that are in the Torah, and the laws of the Torah sometimes do reflect those cultural influences. Again, unless it's an issue in which God absolutely has to go against the grain on everything, because it's a matter of utmost principle. I hope that's clear. Thank you, Smash Islam. And now we go to the great Da Vinci, who writes, and I quote, "What do you think of Greek mythology, which is part of many school curricula? Is it helpful, or does it create confusion to school children?" Unquote. The way it's taught, it's probably harmful. I mean, I don't know how they turn this into something that's harmful, but they did everything they teach, I believe, in the schools is generally harmful. I think that schools are like propaganda mills where children are not taught properly and are not raised properly. I think the way things are presented to children in schools today are very destructive. And we see the results. We see the terrible results. We see how kids come out of school. Thank you, Da Vinci. And now we go to our friend Kalman Ben Menachem, who writes, and I quote, "Reb Chaim, mass murderers like Pol Pot and Chou En Lai became communists as students in Paris. Were their teachers self-hating Jews? Thank you," unquote. I don't know. Probably not, but I don't know. Most of the French communists were not Jews. There was always a huge communist movement in France. And most of them were not Jews. So probably not, but I don't know for sure. I really don't know. Thank you, Kalman. And now we go to the great Selhar, who writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim, what can you tell us about Rabbi in name only, Avi Weiss? Is he liberal only on religious issues or all around?" Unquote. I'll tell you a story about Avi Weiss that shows you what type of individual this is. Avi Weiss, who's from Riverdale in the Bronx, by the way, he has a congregation in Riverdale. Avi Weiss was at a demonstration at the Mosayev Ballet, the Mosayev Soviet Ballet, on September 2nd, 1986, because he was one of the leaders of Student Struggle for Soviet Jewry. He wasn't a student, he was a rabbi even then, but on September 2nd, 1986, very important day, the Mosayev, for the first time in many, many years, started performing again in New York City. And it was a big test of whether the Soviets would be able to have their performances, even though they were persecuting, oppressing, and torturing Soviet Jews and holding them hostage and not allowing Soviet Jews to leave the Soviet Union. Would they be able to have a smooth performance and get away with what they're doing in a city like New York, where at that time there were 1.5 million Jews? Would they be able to get away with something like this or not? It was a big question. We tear gassed that Soviet ballet at Lincoln Center. We went in there. I was the national chairman of the Jewish Defense League, the JDL. We went in there. This was the most famous incident in the struggle to free Soviet Jews. It was a huge incident. 3,000 people had to flee because of the tear gas. We released a military tear gas canister in the middle of the ballet. 3,000 people were forced to flee. 50 Soviet diplomats, including both Soviet ambassadors, 50 Soviet diplomats and Soviet performers in the ballet, refused to leave when the FBI ordered them to leave and ordered the place to be evacuated. They refused to leave and they passed out because of the tear gas, and they had to be hospitalized overnight. So both Soviet ambassadors, the Soviet ambassador to the United Nations in New York and the Soviet ambassador to the United States in Washington, both Soviet ambassadors were injured and had to be hospitalized overnight because of this tear gas incident. That's a huge international incident. And 48 other Soviet diplomats and Soviet performers who were there who refused to leave were also injured and had to be taken by ambulance to hospitals and stay in hospitals overnight. This was a huge diplomatic incident. Gorbachev and Ronald Reagan and everybody condemned it, and it was a huge incident. But meanwhile, the issue of Soviet Jewry became a giant issue because of this. This got huge attention. It was the most important event. More important even than the bombings. It was the most important event in terms of disrupting Soviet-American relations and in terms of pushing forward the issue of Soviet Jewry. It was a historic event that really led to the liberation of Soviet Jews in the end. Then the Soviets saw they had no choice. If they were going to continue to have a good relationship with the United States, they had to open the doors and let the Jews out, and eventually they did. And this incident played a decisive role in freeing the Soviet Jews and liberating over 1 million Soviet Jews. But Avi Weiss was at this event to demonstrate outside. He was holding a demonstration outside where the demonstrators used to sing, "Please, Mr. Gorbachev, let my people go." That was what they would be doing. And Avi Weiss was demonstrating outside with signs when he heard that there was a tear gas attack inside. He pretended to have a heart attack. He pretended he was so upset that he pretended to have a heart attack. And it was reported that Avi Weiss, the so-called rabbi, said that he, you know, may have suffered a heart attack. I mean, you know, it was so fake and so obviously fake. I mean, just complete baloney. Complete baloney. So this is the type of individual he is. Trying to divert attention from the issue of Soviet Jews because he was so embarrassed. He was so taken aback and so embarrassed by the fact that we decided to do what had to be done to make sure that our brothers and sisters were not going to be held hostage behind an iron curtain of Soviet oppression and destruction. Anyway, and of course, he wanted to bring on even more condemnation against us by doing this. But this is an example of what a phony he is, what a fake he is. He's a fake. He's not a sincere person. Thank you, Tzelhar. And now we go to the great Binyamin Yisrael, who writes, and I quote, "Who is the lesser of the evils among post-1948 20th century Republican presidents?" Okay. Who's the lesser of the evils? Well, definitely would be Ronald Reagan. Definitely Ronald Reagan. And now, Ronald Reagan was the least bad of all presidents, Republican or Democrat, in post-1948 or even the 20th century. Or later on, I see you ask, who is the lesser of the evils overall of all 20th century Republican presidents, and which is the worst overall? The lesser of the evils for all was Ronald Reagan. And now Binyamin writes, who is the worst of the post-1948 20th century Republican presidents? That would be probably a tie. It's hard to say. I mean, Richard Nixon was terrible. Gerald Ford was terrible. And George H.W. Bush was terrible. And George W. Bush was, I mean, very hard for me to say Binyamin. I think all four, there are different aspects in which all four of those were really awful presidents. I would say Nixon, Ford, and the first Bush, Bush Sr., were all tied for the worst in post-1948. And then you're right, who was the worst overall in the 20th century? Which is lesser of the evils and which is the worst overall? In the 20th century. Again, I would say those three. Nixon, Ford, and Bush Sr. were all tied for worst place. I'd have to say it's a tie between all of them. They were all so terrible. Thank you, Binyamin. And now we go to Daniel, who writes, and I quote, "What is your opinion of Pope Francis?" Unquote. I don't like this left-wing Pope's pronouncements. I don't like the fact that he's interfering in the Middle East and said that he's going in May to promote peace in the Middle East, so-called peace. I think he has a lot of chutzpah interfering and telling Israel what to do. And I don't like his pronouncements on trying to win over the media, because he wants to get positive media coverage for the Vatican and wants the left not to be against the Vatican anymore. And so he's telling Catholics, basically, don't oppose homosexuals anymore. Don't fight for the right to life anymore. Don't fight for these other things. You gotta concentrate on these other issues, like fighting against capitalism and fighting against free markets. Because that's what he's written about. He's written he's written liberation theology proposals in which he attacks free markets and proposes things that are socialistic. So I do not like him. Thank you, Danielle. And now we go to the great Dr. Dan, the voice of reason, common sense, and logic, who writes, and I quote, one, talk about what happened in Kusra and JTF should respond, unquote. Kusra is an Arab village. What happened was the Arab Nazis are constantly attacking and throwing stones at Jewish, not only at Jewish hilltop posts, outposts, but at Jews everywhere, at Jewish soldiers, Jewish police, Jews that go traveling through the area. The Arabs are constantly throwing stones at them, are sometimes firing at them. They're attacking Jews all the time, every day, in Judea and Samaria. But the Jewish hilltop communities, the young Jewish hilltop settlers, fight back. And so there's a Jewish hilltop outpost called Esh Kodesh. Esh Kodesh means holy fire. Good name. And some of these young settlers from Esh Kodesh were being stoned, and so they decided to run after the people stoning them to stop the stone throwing and to pursue the attackers, which everybody has a right to do. If somebody attacks you, you have a right to pursue them. You have a right to make a citizen's arrest in any country. And so they went in to stop the stone throwing and to pursue the attackers. There were about 11 of them. And they were immediately ambushed by the entire town and held captive. When they went into the town, they were ambushed by the whole town and held captive. They had cell phones, so when they saw what was happening, when they saw they were surrounded, they called the Israel Defense Forces, they called the Israeli army with their cell phones, they told them that they're going to be lynched, that the town was attacking them and they were going to be lynched. And so the IDF, the Israeli army, realizing this could be a public relations disaster for the so-called PIS process, for the so-called peace process, which we call the PIS process, the IDF, realizing this would be a disaster, called the town's leaders and warned them against any lynching. They warned them not to allow the town to lynch these Jews, even though the people in the town wanted to. In the end, Israeli soldiers, so they beat the Jews. They were all beaten. They held them hostage. They beat them. The town people beat these Jews. But they didn't murder them because the Israeli army had warned them and the Israeli soldiers were on their way. And the Israeli soldiers quickly came to the scene. And the Jews were released when the Israeli soldiers got there. But they had been held captive and beaten, which is illegal. First, stones were thrown at them. They went in to defend themselves. Then they're held captive and beaten when they go in to pursue the stone throwers to stop the stone throwing. All of that is blatantly illegal. So what does the Bolshevik news media, the Jew-hating Bolshevik media in Israel do? They make the Arab attackers out to be the good guys because they say they only beat but didn't murder. They didn't murder the Jews, so that means they're good. You see, they didn't murder them. They protected them. They defended them, they said. They protected and defended. They didn't murder them because they didn't want to be charged with murder. They were warned by the Israeli army that we know that they're there. Do not kill these people. Do not touch these people. Don't lynch these people because you'll be charged. They didn't want to be charged with murder. That's the only reason. If the Israeli army hadn't been aware of what was going on, they would have murdered them. And they're the ones who are responsible. I mean, they should have all been arrested for beating and taking hostage Jews. They should have been arrested. But instead, the Israelis the Israeli army arrested the Jews instead of arresting the Arabs. And the Israeli media made the Arabs out to look like good guys and the Jews are the bad guys. That is what happens in Israel when you have an Israeli army and an Israeli media that are controlled by self-hating Jewish anti-Semites. JTF is doing its best to tell the truth about this and to spread the truth about this and to be as helpful as we can to the people there. We are trying to be helpful to the people there. I can't go into full detail about everything that's going on. I can only say that we are trying to be helpful to the wonderful, heroic Jews at this outpost and the wonderful Jews that live in that area of the land of Israel. Now, Dr. Dan, and believe me, if there's one group, these Jews know that if there's one group they can trust, it's our group. At least with us, they know they can trust us, that we will be loyal and we'll do everything we can to help them. Of course, we're a law-abiding organization. We won't do anything illegal. But everything within the law, everything that's legal within the law, we will do to try to help good Jews when they're in trouble. And now Dr. Dan writes, and I quote, "To talk about Menachem Stark, what happened, and the controversy of the New York Post," unquote. Menachem Stark is a multimillionaire landlord who was a multimillionaire landlord from the Satmar Hasidic group, the very anti-Zionist group that says that the creation of the state of Israel is the hand of Satan. I mean, a group filled with hatred toward Israeli Jews and toward other Jews. Anyway, this guy from Satmar apparently had disputes with his tenants and with other people, and he was kidnapped and murdered. Okay. You know, if you have financial disputes with somebody, you don't kidnap and murder them. So obviously what was done to him was wrong. And the New York Post had a big headline saying, who wouldn't want to kill this guy? I mean, that's practically inviting people to say, go and kill the Hasidic Jews and go and kill go and kill somebody if you have a dispute with them. It was a terrible headline. There's no question it was a terrible headline. I'm not going to defend this guy, though, and I'm not going to defend Satmar. Satmar is a terrible movement. And they're the people who claim that Israel causes anti-Semitism and the Zionists cause anti-Semitism. The Satmar caused tremendous anti-Semitism. Tremendous anti-Semitism. Look at how they behave. I mean, this guy was a slumlord, and he owed people money and didn't repay and had loans taken out and did all types of things to people. I mean, this was not a very nice person, to say the least. But if someone had a financial dispute to settle with him, they should take him to court. You don't murder somebody in cold blood. You don't kidnap them and murder them. Thank you, Dr. Dan. And now we go to the great Kahana loyalist who writes, and I quote, "Dear Chaim, do you know if Sheldon Adelson would be sympathetic to JTF, unquote? Oh, God willing. Sheldon Adelson, by the way, is possibly the richest Jew in the world. He's worth $25-30 billion. Either he or Mike Bloomberg, one of them probably is the richest Jew in the world. And he gave $20 million to Newt Gingrich when he was running for president in 2012. He gives money to Netanyahu. He gives money to a lot of causes that we don't like. In any event, would he be sympathetic to JTF? He says he makes a lot of statements on Iran that would sound like JTF statements. I don't know. We have written to him. You know, you can't write to him directly. You can only write to his fund or to his association. I forgot what it is, a foundation or something. There's no other way to get in touch with him. We've written to him. I've even done videos. You can look on YouTube and find that I did a video addressed to him. So we've tried to get to reach him. He's in his 80s. I don't think he looks at YouTube, and I don't think he goes on the internet. So it's hard to get in touch with him. He has a number of children. I think he has five children. I don't know if he has five, four children, five children. I don't remember. His wife is an Israeli. His children are Israeli citizens. So I would love to somehow be able to speak to him and meet with him. Oh, how I would love to be able to meet with him and speak to him, but I can't get to him. Because he creates a wall around him, because I'm not the only one. I mean, there are millions of people, a million different causes and groups would like to speak to him and get to him because of all of his money. So, you know, because of that, it's almost impossible to reach him. It's almost impossible to get in touch with him. We've tried. If anybody can get in touch with him, I would be eternally grateful. If anybody could get in touch with him and let him, and get me a meeting with him, I would be eternally grateful. Eternally grateful. But I would like to at least have a chance to speak to him and try to show him what we're doing and try to convince him to help us. Because he certainly could easily be the one who could give us the support that could save the Jewish people and change Jewish history forever. Thank you, Kahana Loyalist. And now we go to our friend Russian Leo 777, who writes, and I quote, "Please expose the disgusting self-hating Jew Ron Kuby of the Curtis and Kuby show on WABC radio," unquote. Russian Leo, Ron Kuby is not a Jew. He's a liar. He's not a Jew. He never was a Jew. He claims he's a Jew because his father, he claims, converted to Judaism. Baloney. His father never converted. His father was never a Jew. He was never a Jew. He even claims he was in the JDL, which is a complete lie. I was in the JDL the whole time that he claims he was, and he was never in JDL. He made up the whole thing. He was never in JDL. He's not a Jew and never was a Jew. His father was never a Jew. All lies. All lies. And WABC radio should be boycotted. Ron Kuby defended, together with William Kunstler, the murderers of Rabbi Meir Kahana. They were the ones who represented, Ron Kuby and William Kunstler represented El Sayyid Noser, Yimach Shmo V'Zichro Shem Reshayim Yirkav, who murdered and assassinated Rabbi Meir Kahana, and represented the other Muslim terrorists who were involved in the murder of Rabbi Kahana, who also bombed the World Trade Center. They were also involved in the bombing of the World Trade Center. And Ron Kuby and William Kunstler represented those Muslim terrorists who destroyed the World Trade Center, who bombed the World Trade Center. So to have a monster like this on WABC radio, WABC radio should be boycotted. And Curtis Sliwa is scum for having a show with this guy for I don't know how many years. I think they were on for 7 or 8 years together. I don't remember. Scum. Complete scum. He's another Jew hater, by the way, Curtis Sliwa. WABC should be boycotted. And their advertiser should be boycotted. Thank you, Russian Leo. And now we go to the great secular believer who writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim, what do you think of Meir Ettinger, the grandson of Rabbi Kahana? Is he a future leader?" Unquote. Oh, I think so, secular believer. He's fantastic. He's a wonderful Jew. He's a wonderful Jew. And he's on trial now. They have these trumped up charges. They claim that he was monitoring Israeli army movements and Israeli police movements in order to warn the hilltop communities when the police and the army were coming to throw them out of their homes, to expel them. So he and several others were monitoring the movements of Israeli soldiers, Israeli police. So what? Even if they were, so what? What, you're not allowed to watch when Israeli police and Israeli soldiers, where they're moving, what they're doing, and you know, and to make it public knowledge of what they're doing? I mean, this is such a fascist regime we have in Israel. It's just a fascist, anti-Semitic regime. Mayor Ettinger is a wonderful Jew. May Hashem bless him and protect him. And you know, and he's on trial. He actually is in prison right now. They put him in prison for a while, then they put him under house arrest. I mean, just constant persecution of good Jews in Israel. The good Jews are persecuted and the evil Jews are put in power. That's what you have in this evil generation, and that's what we're fighting against. Thank you, secular believer. And now we go to the great Gematria, who writes, and I quote, "Great video on Sharon. Did the Rabbi Zatzal have any interaction with him?" Unquote. Yes, the rabbi met with him after the Yom Kippur War, and he told the rabbi after the Yom Kippur War that if he had had another 24 hours, he could have destroyed the Egyptian Third Army. You know, they surrounded the Egyptian Third Army. Just another 24 hours, he said, we could have destroyed them. Very true. And so because of that, people said, oh, you see, oh, we wish that he was, that Sharon was prime minister. Then he would have done it. He wouldn't have given in like Golda Meir, Moshe Dayan. They gave in to the pressure from Nixon and Kissinger, and they gave in. But if you had the Likud and you had Sharon in power, they wouldn't give in. And Rabbi Kahana used to say, he'll give in too if he becomes prime minister. That's what he says now as a general. You make him prime minister, he'll also give in because he doesn't believe in God. He doesn't have faith. He's a phony. He's an opportunist. And he'll give in the same way. That's what Rabbi Kahana used to say. And people used to say, oh, Rabbi, you're joking. Sharon, he's an extreme right winger. He would never do that. Ah, how our rabbi was so right, and how the Jews, how the vast majority of Jews are almost always so wrong. And now Gematria writes, and I quote, also tell us of Sharon Re, Martin Schlaff, and David Appel, unquote. Well, Martin Schlaff and David Appel were involved in all types of scandals with Sharon, including, by the way, Schlaff was the one who was behind the casino, the gambling casino that was built in Jericho for the PLO and Fatah terrorists. The PLO and Fatah terrorists were raising huge amounts of money from Jewish gamblers who would go to they opened a casino for Jewish gamblers, and there was a big sign on the casino, only Jews are allowed to come in here. Muslims are not allowed to come in here. Gambling is forbidden in Islam. I mean, unbelievable. And the Jews went in on long lines. They couldn't wait to get in. They didn't care. They didn't care that their money was going to the PLO and Fatah Nazi mass murderers. As long as they could have a nice time gambling, they didn't care that their money was being given to these mass murderers. Martin Schlaff, the self-hating Jewish trader from Austria, who lives in Nazi Austria, by the way, Martin Schlaff was the one who was behind the building of the casino and giving the casino to Arafat. David Appel was also involved in all types of corruption and scandals with Sharon. Sharon, in the end, ripped the people of Israel off for millions of dollars. $3 million just for his, chava? Just for his ranch. $3 million just for his ranch. Just huge ripoffs that Sharon and his family engaged in. Massive corruption. And nothing ever happened to them because every time there'd be corruption charges, all they had to do was say, we'll give up land, we'll throw Jews out of their homes. And the Israeli prosecutor said, okay, we won't prosecute you. Can you imagine? That's a country of laws? Can you imagine what evil people are running Israel and running the prosecutor's office and running the news media and running the Israeli Supreme Court? What evil traitors, what vile evil traitors. But that is literally how Israel operates. Thank you, Gematria. And now we go to the great Tag Mechir Tzedek, who writes, and I quote, do you think the Talmud is pacifist as a whole, and is that the reason why Charedim believe and act the way they do, unquote? Of course not. The Talmud is authentic Judaism. Of course not. Judaism is a very militant religion. It's not pacifist at all. At all. The Charedim act the way they do because after 2,000 years they become ghetto Jews. They've become ghetto-minded, frightened little Jews. That's why they act the way they do. It has nothing to do with the Talmud. The Talmud is the exact opposite of their behavior. The Talmud commands us to settle the land of Israel and conquer the land and destroy our enemies and do all the things that the Torah commands us to do. The Talmud 100% is consistent with the Torah, consistent with the Mishnah. The Mishnah is the oral Torah. Torah Shebe'al Peh. And the Torah in the first five books of the Bible, of the Tanakh, is the written Torah. Torah Shebichtav. The Talmud, or the Gemara, in Aramaic it's Gemara, in Hebrew it's called Talmud. The Talmud is simply explanations and commentary and interpretations and instructions on how to follow the Torah. And how to follow both the oral and the written Torah, both the written Torah and the Mishnah. Of course it's not pacifist, not at all. And now Tag Mechir writes, Perush HaMakabi Shiur. Okay, Perush HaMakabi, to remind everybody, is one of the great books that our leader and our great Rabbi Meir Kahana, Zecher Tzaddik VeKadosh Livracha, Hashem Yikom Damo, wrote. One of the things Rabbi Kahana writes in Perush HaMakabi is that on Yom HaDin, on the Day of Judgment, the nations that oppressed or mocked or ridiculed the Jews will face the same destruction the Jews faced, except it'll be forever. For instance, it says that Mitzrayim, that Egypt will become like a shmama. Shmama is like a desolate place, a completely desolate place is shmama, even worse than a desert. Desert is midbar. Shmama is like a completely desolate place. And it says Mitzrayim is going to become a shmama. That's what the prophets teach us. Because the land of Israel became like that. So what happened to the land of Israel will happen now to the enemies of the Jewish people. It's going to happen to Mitzrayim, and it's going to happen, Mitzrayim is Egypt, by the way, and it's going to happen to all the nations that persecuted the Jews. They're going to have the same thing that happened to the Jews is going to happen to them now. Except their punishment will be permanent. The Jewish punishment lasted a long time. I mean, the Jews suffered a great deal. But in the end, they came back to their land, they're rebuilding their land, and they're going to have redemption. For the enemies of the Jews, that will never happen. Their punishment will be permanent. They're going to get the same punishment the Jews got, midah keneged midah, measure for measure. Except from their punishment, there's going to be no recovery. There'll be no return. Now, of course, the righteous among the nations, the righteous Gentiles who are the exceptions, will be spared, naturally, and they actually will be rewarded for their righteousness. So this does not include the righteous among the nations, but the majority among the nations who did terrible things to the Jews, who were evil, they're going to get the same thing they did to the Jews is going to happen to them. It's going to be on their head, and their punishment, though, when it happens to them, their punishment will be permanent. And the rabbi brilliantly explains this, how it's going to happen, and what the end result is going to be, in the way that only Rabbi Kahana could, brilliantly. Thank you, Tag Mechir. And now we go, one moment, let me just check something here very quickly. Okay. And now we go to our great friend EB22, who writes, and I quote, "Why do you think Ariel Sharon is getting so much praise from the right, including in the United States?" Unquote. Because the so-called right is not really right-wing, and they're influenced by the left-wing news media, and they do what the left-wing news media says you're supposed to do. There's never been a real right. In Israel or in America, there is no real right. And so, I mean, you have certain people, you may have certain Gentiles on the right in the United States who just don't know any better, who simply don't understand what they're praising. That's also possible. But real right, people on the real right in Israel do not praise Ariel Sharon, God forbid. Thank you, EB22. And now we go to our friend Maimonides, who writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim, do you believe that Chris Christie did not know about the Bridgegate scandal, and will this be enough to end his presidential bid?" Unquote. Maimonides, this is something I spoke about extensively, as you probably figured that I would in my opening for the program, in the opening that I do in the beginning of the program. I do believe he did know about the scandal. I believe that he was involved in the cover-up. I don't have any doubt that he was involved in the cover-up, that's for sure. And his behavior was blatantly illegal, and his aides' behavior was blatantly illegal. Will it be enough to end his presidential bid? The Republican establishment is still pushing his candidacy. I don't know. It depends if this continues to go on. If this continues to go on, it would be very harmful to his presidential bid, but it's possible the issue will disappear until he gets the nomination, God forbid. Then, once he gets the nomination, the media will come down on him again with this. But, all of a sudden, it'll suddenly come back. So it's possible. If it goes away, then he could still be a serious candidate for president if it starts to go away. But if it continues and lingers on with investigations and other revelations, then it could be very harmful to him, even though the Republican establishment still would like to see him as the Republican candidate for president, God forbid. And we have to do, of course, everything we can to prevent that. Thank you, Maimonides. And now, our friend Christians for Jews writes, and I quote, "I personally feel Michael Savage plagiarizes your opinions when he has run out of material. Do you feel the same as well?" Unquote. There's no question Michael Savage plagiarizes what we say on this show. For instance, one time, I happened to be in someone's car. They're driving me home after we had a meeting. They're driving me home. And they put on the radio and they put on Michael Savage. And he starts saying, Jewish Week, W-E-A-K. You know, there's a newspaper called Jewish Week, W-E-E-K. And Jewish Week is a UJA Federation rag in New York City. Left-wing, evil, self-hating newspaper. Michael Savage starts saying Jewish Week, W-E-A-K. Now, I always on my videos said, on my videos and on my, especially when I had my TV show, I would always say Jewish Week, W-E-A-K. And we put our TV show on our website. Michael Savage used the exact same line. He spelled it out, W-E-A-K, the way I always used to do. I mean, he literally took exact quotes from my programs and was using them. There's no question that he plagiarizes. No question about it. So, yes, Christians for Jews, I certainly do agree with you. I know it's true. Thank you, Christians for Jews. And now we go to the great Confederate Kahanist, who writes, and I quote, "Der Chaim, who was the worst Republican president? Thanks and God bless," unquote. Okay, well, this is sort of like more general than the question that Binyamin Yisrael asked. Binyamin Yisrael asked who was the worst post-1948 president, or who was the worst president of the 20th century, Republican president of the 20th century. I would have to say, I would still have to go back and say that I believe the worst Republican president tied for that, there's several that are tied for that spot. Richard Nixon, Gerald Ford, and George H.W. Bush, George Bush Sr. I would say those three are tied for the spot of the three worst Republican presidents in American history. Thank you, Confederate Kahanist. And I want to thank all of our great JTFers for another show that I very much enjoyed doing. Until next week, Shalom.